And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this Friday News Dump Edition. As I don't know what else to call it. You just announced that
Well, the U actually hasn't announced anything.
Well, that's true. Per sources, we've been able here in the sports media and the Twin Cities area, been able to figure out what happened. Again, I have yet to see a news release into my inbox. But we do know some things tonight, so we could talk about that, and then we'll talk about post-National Signing Day. I'll give you guys what I think is the in-depth analysis on the 25 commits. I'm not going to quite go PJ Fleck level for those that were
nobody's going to listen to a podcast that's 4.5 hours long.
Yes. So we do have some things to talk about tonight, because I think this is probably going to be our last podcast here for at least a few weeks until spring ball starts to get closer. So we do have some things to talk about tonight.
Yeah. So let's get into it. So the news of the day is we know at least the fate of pretty much everybody in terms of their review in front of the I don't know what you even call that. It would be the EOAA panel. I'm not even sure what specifically was, but it was a panel of one faculty, one student, and
somebody else,
and yeah, one other person. I don't know that much about it, but they had a 2-day hearing, 2 8-hour hearings is what was scheduled. Sounded like it went over considerably more. It sounded like Ryan Pasiga and Lee Hutton represented all of the players. Actually, Pasiga represented just Antoine Winfield Jr., is my understanding. And then Hutton represented the remaining players. So that took a long time, and now we finally got the ruling. So, Ryan, what was the ruling that right now is basically through sources and speculation right now, but because nothing is official through the university?
Yeah, so as of Friday night at 7:20, as we are recording this, of the 10 suspended, 4 are still going to be going through with expulsions per sources here once again. So defensive end, redshirt freshman, Tamarian Johnson, Ray Buford, Keontae Harden, and Dior Johnson. So 3 defensive backs are also still recommended for expulsion. Is it recommendations, or it sounds like that's what the U is, their course of action is going to be going through now after going through these hearings, is going to be expulsions for those 4. And then Carlton Dijon got his his course of action lessened to a suspension academically and athletically for 1 year, as long as wide receiver Mark Williams. And I know there had been some speculation that it was just athletically based. I've had spoken with 2 University of Minnesota spokespeople tonight, and they both confirm with me, or they both tell me at least, that it is both academic and athletically. So they're basically suspended from the U for 1 year.
Yeah, which basically they're pretty much done, unless of
they're
course,
screwed.
Yeah, I mean, they can. I mean, I guess in the case of Dijon, like he was paying his way anyway, right? So, do you mean by academically, like they're not even allowed to take classes, or they're not
correct?
Allowed, I didn't realize
that's
that.
That's what's been put across to me tonight. So, don't shoot the messenger if this comes out that I'm wrong. It's just what I've been told from 2 sources or 2 people, 2 University of Minnesota spokespeople tonight, is that they are suspended academically and athletically for 1 year. So that would scream to me, Luke, I mean, if I'm interpreting it wrong, but they cannot take classes and they obviously cannot participate in football activities. So the good news would be that 4 have been reinstated and immediately and have been cleared, and that's quarterback Seth Green, running back Kobe McCrary, cornerback Antonio Chanot, and then All-American true safety from last year Antoine Winfield. So 4 were cleared, and so only 4 expulsions there as well. So there's some good news, obviously, in there with 4 of them being cleared, but this is just an entirely messy kind of a situation.
Yeah, and I'd have to imagine that the people that still have some sort of punishment levied on them, or at least the opportunity for some sort of punishment levied on them, I'd imagine that they have some sort of appeals process. I was trying to review this. I believe that they can appeal through the provost. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, so there haven't been any appeals yet. The way it's been explained to me once again is that these weren't appeals. These were just the hearings. So sure. Now that the hearing process is over with and the punishments have been doled out, allegedly, now they can appeal to the provost's office if they do want to appeal. And I'm not entirely sure how quickly that process would go through. Again, this is very new information as we're getting it. But if Tamarian Ray, Keontae Dior, Carlton, and Mark do want to appeal it, they do have the option to through the provost's office. I would imagine that Seth, Kobe, Antonio, and Antoine are not going to appeal it, obviously because they have been cleared of all wrongdoing. And so the good news is obviously with those four, Seth being someone expected to compete immediately in the quarterback competition, Kobe obviously getting carries last year and providing depth at a spot that they can allow both Dominic and Mohammed to redshirt. We'll get into both of those. And then Chanel and Antoine, obviously for a defensive secondary that is now potentially losing two starters and another depth safety Antoine Winfield, obviously goes in right away, is going to be your starter for the next 3 years would be my guess. And yes, folks, his father did confirm with Darren Wolfson that he is going to be staying with the U. So for anybody thinking that he may be transferring elsewhere, reports tonight are that he is going to stay with Minnesota, and I anticipate him to start for the next 3 years.
And he's actually been going – he was enrolled in classes, and he has actually
– Yes. He's been enrolled this entire – He's been enrolled, and he is going to stay here. And then Antonio Chanel, when you look at the cornerback depth chart, there are only four scholarship players at corner for the spring, and one is hurt, and Coney Durr – who just had ACL surgery. So they have five players total at cornerback, counting two walk-ons and Brady Weiland and a new walk-on transfer from Central Lakes. So they need bodies, and they need bodies badly. So we'll have to see. But, I mean, my projected – I had somebody ask me this on Gopher Illustrated today. My projected defensive backs starters would probably be right now Chanel, Antoine Winfield – Duke McGee, and depending on how it works out, Keandre Thomas, who redshirted this past year, or Alonzo Creighton. They just don't have a lot of options right now. So There's some things that have to clear them or clean themselves up. But that's the latest tonight. So four are back, four are facing expulsion, and two are facing year-long academic and athletic suspension. So hopefully we can now turn the page on this, but I'm sure there's going to be appeal process, and it always seems to drag on knowing legal matters, Luke.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm curious, and I don't expect you to have this answer, but I wonder if the alleged victim actually could appeal, the rulings being upheld. So in terms of like the four getting off, like if she could appeal that, I really don't know how that works. I'm kind of spitballing and thinking out loud here. But it doesn't seem like it's probably a done deal, as even though it might feel like it.
Yeah, the news I heard tonight is she actually can appeal to everything too. So again, I would imagine someone on some side is going to appeal. So I don't know if she's going to necessarily do the – because again, the five that were in the room, allegedly in terms of reports, were Tamarian Ray, Keontae and Dior, and Carlton. Carlton was I'm trying to even think of how I want to phrase this. His alleged implication there was going to be within that expulsion group, but Carlton went from expulsion down to suspension. And then Mark went from – he actually stayed the same at suspension for a year, and then Seth, Kobe, and Antoine went from suspension for a year to cleared. So
yeah.
I don't know how much she's actually going to want to do, considering most of the guys that were allegedly in that room have basically gotten the same – kind of treatment, and they are being severely punished, obviously, with four out of the five being recommended for expulsion. Or
you could more or less say the other ones are expulsion too.
Yes.
For a practical sense of the matter, I mean, who's going to stick around for a year just to wait? I don't know.
Mark Williams being from Jackson, Alabama, and
right.
Carlton is a local kind of a kid. So I don't know how it plays out, but it basically is the death penalty for those six. So, we'll see how it plays out. I'm sure there's going to be appeals, but that opens four scholarships up. And I was updating the GI football scholarship chart tonight, and you can check it out on Gopher Illustrated. But I have them at 83 out of 85 scholarships, considering everybody that just signed.
Wait, I thought everybody was worried about oversigning. Now they got 83. I mean, I realize that they just lost four like that, but
exactly. But, I don't count them. And then also the news that offensive lineman Ted Stieber has left the football team. I've heard a couple of different reasons why, but one being injury related. So he's not going to count against the 85 as well. So. Mm-hmm. It is it's quite the predicament right now. Like we were talking about in the pre-production meeting, Luke, you look at the offensive line, and PJ talked about it on Wednesday. They might have six guys healthy for the spring on the offensive line, and you look at why. You have Vincent Calhoun out with surgery related. He had a turf toe injury that he was getting looked at. Garrison Wright is out with various injuries that he had surgery on. You lose Ted, and then I believe Jared Weiler is still going to be recovering from off-season surgery. So you're at seven right there, and I'm sure there's another injury thrown in there. I don't know how they're going to have spring ball with six healthy offensive linemen.
Well,
but
not to mention you just brought it up. They have five defensive backs right now?
Like, yeah, they have five. Well, they have five corners.
Yeah.
Potentially, they have maybe six safeties, which is plenty. But there is. I don't know what they're going to be doing for spring ball, and I'm excited to see what they do, obviously, a month from now. But offensive line / defensive line play in terms of how aggressive they are, because, again, somebody rolls an ankle this spring, you're potentially at five offensive linemen. So mm-hmm. Not entirely sure how that's going to play out, but for the guys who are healthy, know that they're going to be getting a ton of reps.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really interesting. Any idea? So real quick on spring practice, let's just get through what we know about that right now. We know that the spring game is, what, April 15th, which traditionally is, I believe, tax day, right?
Isn't that also Easter this year?
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't look towards that at all. I know that traditionally that's tax day, but because it falls on a weekend, that'll actually be a few days later. I'd imagine that the spring game will be kind of a hot commodity given the momentum that Fleck is pulling. Do you have any idea if practices are going to be open yet?
I just literally, Luke knows this, I just hung up with somebody who would know, and there's no indication from Fleck that practices are going to be open. The source I talked with within the University of Minnesota Athletic Department said that Fleck has mentioned how he'd like them open, but now what open means is entirely unknown to some people on the Minnesota staff right now. So I'm sure we'll find out here in the coming weeks. The spring ball is going to be starting up here in a few weeks. But from the looks of it, the spring game is going to be on the Saturday before Easter. So, and again, for people who are wondering or going to ask me next, how many people do you think are going to show for the spring game? Well, are you going to tell me it's going to be 60 degrees and sunny like it was last year? Or are you going to tell me it's going to be like 2 years ago where it was like 38 degrees and northwest winds at 15 to 25? Because I think a large part of that depends on what the weather is doing in Minnesota. Obviously, you see all these SEC schools drawing 50, 60, 70,000. Well, yeah, because it's also 70 degrees and sunny, where if it's 60 and sunny, I don't think people have too much of an excuse not to come out. But if it's 35 degrees and northwest winds 15 to 25, like I can understand why some people would not want to come out. So I'm going to be there regardless. I'll be at every spring practice. I'm allowed to be regardless, so I can give people at Gopher Illustrated a look inside what a PJ Fleck spring practice is like. And obviously we'll have 50-plus pictures and multiple videos from every spring practice. So if you weren't able to take advantage of that 9-for-1 deal earlier in the month, about 2-3 weeks ago now, I don't know, everything's kind of running together now that I finally get to catch up on sleep. So a lot of things happening, but Luke, let's get into these 25 signees.
Yeah, so what was that? Signing day was Tuesday, right? They were
Wednesday.
Okay, they were able to lock down their first elite class of the PJ Fleck era. I'm sure you didn't get sick of hearing how elite it was. All right, let's get into it. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Looks like they brought in two quarterbacks. Tanner Morgan and Ray Estes. What do you have on them, Ryan?
Yeah, they actually brought in three when count Neil McLaren in there as well. So
yeah,
you look at the quarterback scholarship chart right now, and it looks awfully interesting for fall camp, because if everyone stays, you have six scholarship quarterbacks for fall camp. I don't remember the last time there were six on the roster for fall camp.
That's going to be a record.
Yeah, so that's where I'm already anticipating someone's going to be moving on after the spring. Now, who that is, that's a great question, but we'll see how it plays out. But you do have six scholarship quarterbacks, so the three new ones folks are going to have to get to know, first being a junior college signee that was previously signed under Tracy Clays, and he signed a national letter of intent instead of an aid agreement, which is a lot tougher to get out of if you're PJ Fleck, is Neil McLaren. He's someone from a Mississippi junior college, someone that I know had other opportunities to potentially play defensive back at a Division I level because he is extremely athletic at 6 foot, 295 pounds. But he
maybe
is here
there,
to play
maybe there's your DB.
Yeah, maybe B. Maybe. We'll see what happens. But he's someone that when you watch off tape, obviously uber athletic in the pocket, someone that can obviously run the read option really well. So I'm not entirely sure how that's going to translate to a PJ Fleck kind of an offense, what he wants to do here, because he is a Clays guy that signed. And he was the one that he was the only out of state commit slash signee that is still left from when Tracy Clays took over. So I'm not entirely sure what to expect from Neil this spring. He displays a pretty good arm off film. Not necessarily the most accurate of guys, but he is extremely athletically gifted. And then we get to the other early enrollee in Mr. Tanner Morgan. I've been on record on Gopher Illustrated on other media outlets saying that Tanner Morgan has the best quarterback tape I've seen since Philip Nelson in terms of a Gopher quarterback signee. The two things that stand out to me in terms of what makes Tanner's film really, really elite, Luke, is his accuracy and the way he's able to elude pressure in the pocket and find guys downfield and find them accurately. So when you watch his film, and if you haven't already, search Tanner Morgan Huddle, H-U-D-L, if you don't know how to find their senior highlight tapes. But he's someone that in terms of with ball placement, he's very accurate, and he can always find the guy down the field. And it's not like the guy, his receiver, is having to wait for the ball at all. He's usually, in terms of his tape anyway, he's able to find them in stride, or if he's trying to pinpoint something on the back shoulder or something, he's able to do so. And finally, we have Mr. Ray Estes, someone from East St. Louis High School. He was a Missouri commit at the time, and then he flipped to Minnesota. He was committed to PJ at Western Michigan previously. Then he flipped to Missouri, and then he finally flipped to Minnesota. I'm not entirely sure what to think of Mr. Estes because I think long-term, he's probably not going to be a quarterback. He's 6 foot, 170 pounds, and mighty my, he would probably look pretty good as a cornerback. And I've heard some rumblings that that may be his long-term destination in terms of that's what this staff thinks, but he is going to get his shot at quarterback. Now, whether that's, again, going to turn into a Donovan Jones type of situation, when Minnesota signed Donovan, they said, we give you your shot at quarterback, and they did. But I believe that only lasts about a week, week and a half before they said, well, I can tell you'd find the field much quicker at wide receiver, and Donovan took to that before obviously transferring out. So I wonder if Ray gets another Donovan Jones type of situation where he's there 7 to 10 days in camp and then finally moves over to defensive back, or what ends up happening. So I know the next question I'm going to get, because it's what I've been seemingly getting daily, is, Ryan, who do you think starts a quarterback in 2017? And folks, I'm not entirely sure what to tell you, because six scholarship quarterbacks, PJ does have a history at Western Michigan of starting a true freshman in Tanner Morgan. But obviously Connor Rota being back and on scholarship for his fifth year as well is intriguing. So I'd really like to see what spring ball looks like, what fall camp looks like before I can accurately give you something there. But I'd say my two favorites right now are probably Connor Rota and Tanner Morgan. I'd say Tanner's probably the starter. If you put a gun to my head right now, because I'm not entirely sold on Connor Rota. I know that there's a bunch of people, like a bunch of Gopher fans, who think he's the next coming of the next Gopher great quarterback. But folks, there was a reason Mitch Leidner was starting over him. And it's not because the staff just had an affinity for Mitch Leidner, which they somewhat did. But I think Mitch, in my eyes, and I said this throughout the entire football season, was the best option for Minnesota to win games. So obviously Connor's accurate. He's got pretty good arm strength in trying to fit it between the linebackers and the safeties. But let's see how good his processor is in his head when he's trying to pick up a new offense here. I think Demaryius Croft still has the most natural quarterback talent on the roster, but the issue is his inconsistency. You look at what his body of work has been in practices. It's been he can nail you, perfect ball placement, perfect arm strength down the field, 20 yards, and then the next throw, he misses you high or low, or he just, it's an inaccurate throw by about 10. So if you tell me that Kirk Sriracha is going to fix that in terms of whether it's mechanically or whether it's all mental, if he can get that down, I think Demery would obviously have the chance to compete. And then finally with Seth Green, I know on the Gopher interwebs, I've been told that I'm much lower than others in terms of Seth's ability to be able to compete right away. I know that there were some within the Gopher staff of the previous staff of Tracy Clays that thought Seth was probably going to be the starter for the 2017 season. Obviously a coaching change, more bodies being brought in. I'm just telling you, from what I've seen of Seth, I think he's still a year away. I think his throwing motion is takes far too long. I think his arm strength isn't quite there yet. And I think he has a ways to go there in terms of his processor. And again, for people who don't know, understand what I say by processor, just the how quickly a quarterback can, number one, read the defense. And number two, once you do read the defense, where are you supposed to go? So on any given play, you know, what are your route combinations to combat a specific defensive scheme? It's a brand new system being brought in here with PJ, so everybody's going to be on equal playing field. So I think it's ultimately going to come down to who can pick up PJ's offensive scheme the quickest, and if you can, I hope you can be accurate because you're going to be the starter.
All right, so we have a jumbled mess of quarterback bringing in three. And it sounds like, you know, two, maybe you could even play defensive back if needed be. Okay. Let's move to running back. They signed two athletes there, Dominic London. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the second name. So I'm going to leave that one to you.
Mohammed Ibrahim.
Ibrahim. I was not even going to be close. I knew I could get Mohammed, but Ibrahim, not a chance.
Yeah. And so when you look at these two guys, I'm much, much higher on Dominic London than I am Mohammed Ibrahim. I've seen Dominic in a camp setting starting in March. I've seen him. I went to a couple of East Ridge games when he was a junior. I was pretty impressed. I saw him in March, or it might have been early April. I don't remember. Down at a Chicago Nike camp where he was one of the top five running backs in the entire camp. And 75% of the guys in that camp signed Division I somewhere. And then ultimately I saw him again this summer when he earned his offer to Minnesota camp, and I went to a couple of his games this fall. I'm very high on Dominic. What he is he's 5'9", 195 pounds, and he's a north-south runner that can make you miss in a phone booth. And what I mean by that is he's not going to be an east-west guy that really likes to go east-west and then gain speed, gets the corner, and then ultimately use his shiftiness and elusiveness to make you miss. Dominic is just, he's very, you can be standing directly in front of him, and whether it's a head fake, a shoulder fake, just a quick plant with a foot to make you miss, he's very elusive. And while he may not have the burner speed to break off a 60, 70-yard run, what he can do is turn a 3-yard gain into an 8-yard gain by just making a couple of guys miss. I'm very high on Dominic, and personally, I think he's going to be a guy that once Shannon and Rodney leave, if you look at the current stable of running backs, Dominic is the guy. I think he'll be succeeding them in terms of, I think he's the starter once those guys leave. So when he is a redshirt sophomore, I'm very high on him. I don't entirely see it in Mohammed Ibrahim. I know at Scout we have him as a two-star. He was one of the only two-stars that PJ signed. I know other recruiting sites had him much higher, and I just don't see it. I talked with our East Coast guy about him, and again, off film, Mohammed is a 5'8", 190-pound power back that isn't particularly fast. He's very powerful, but he got caught from behind far too much for my liking. He doesn't exactly make a man miss too many times. Again, if you're going to be a power back, I'd want you to be Kobe McCrary. I'd want you to be 6', 235 pounds, not 5'9", 200 pounds. So this is definitely one, this is probably one of the only few ones I see in the class where it's really like, trust the coaches on this one. Obviously they're being paid a lot more money than I to evaluate this, but I don't see it with Ibrahim. So I think they did very well with London. We're going to have to trust the coaches on Ibrahim.
All right, let's move to wide receiver, a position where quite frankly, they don't have a lot of consistency. I mean, outside of maybe Eric Carter and maybe Tyler Johnson, and Rashad Still, you know, pretty much nobody else has seen the field for at least consistently. So they bring in a Chris Bell,
Demetrius Douglas and Harry Van Dyne. I got you, Luke. Oh, I got you.
I couldn't. I am terrible at reading these names. I'm sorry.
It's all good. So we'll start at the top alphabetically with Chris Bell. Chris is someone I know from talking with Matt Simon at the Signing Day Social on Wednesday. I know that he is extremely high on Chris Bell, as is PJ Fleck. And there's not a lot of senior tape out on him because after his first game of the season, he tore a ligament in his hand, and that didn't allow him to play the rest of his senior year. So the story goes that Chris came to their summer camp in between his junior and senior year and just lit it up. I mean, he was catching every ball in sight. His body control in terms of catch, it was off the charts. They offered him immediately. He committed immediately. So when you look at his offers, you'll see that Western Michigan and Minnesota are his only two offers. Well, people didn't have a chance to get him in his camp setting because that was the only camp that Chris went to. And then obviously his senior tape is one game before tearing his hand. So I know that the staff feels that they really got a steal in Chris Bell. And I know that PJ likes to compare him to Mohamed Sanu, who is going to be playing on Sunday in the Super Bowl for the Atlanta Falcons. He's their number two receiver. He's someone that PJ coached when he was at Rutgers as the wide receiver coach. So this is one where I think he can definitely play early if the staff's evaluation is anything accurate to what it is. And again, this staff's wide receiver evaluations are something that should get you excited between PJ's experience in the NFL and at the collegiate level as a wide receiver coach, and then obviously Matt Simon as well. Next would be Demetrius Douglas. He is Omar Douglas's son. For those folks who remember Omar playing back in the 80s, Omar had the 5-touchdown game that I still believe stands in as a Big Ten record. The story with Demetrius goes, Minnesota had him on campus in July. They wanted him as a defensive back, as did Oregon. He comes for the recruiting barbecue, and then he decides he wants to go to Oregon. Well, Oregon goes through a coaching change, and then so does Minnesota. And I know that PJ was extremely interested in Demetrius Douglas. His first stop when he went out on the recruiting trail as Minnesota's head coach was with the offensive coordinator and the wide receiver coach to head out west to Oregon to go see Demetrius. They were able to get in his house on the first night. That was a Thursday night. He took Friday to think about it, and then Saturday he pulled the trigger before Notre Dame and Brian Kelly, who were scheduled to be at his house the next evening, were able to get in there. So he's obviously got position flexibility. When you look at that cornerback depth chart, there are bodies of need there, and he is a very, very good athlete. That's why Oregon and Notre Dame were after him so heavily, but he is. I would be very surprised if he has to move to cornerback in his true freshman season. I know that the staff really wants to keep him at wide receiver. They think he can play early as well, so we'll see how that goes. And then finally, with Harry Van Dyne, a Kansas receiver, he chose the Gophers over the Hawkeyes, and that's an interesting story. Yes, he did choose Minnesota over Iowa, but the story is his brother went out and played junior hockey. And then 4 years later, he came back and he wanted to walk on at Iowa because he had a previous opportunity there before he went to play junior college or junior hockey. Iowa took him. So his brother actually enrolled as an early enrollee in January at Iowa. The next night after he did that, Iowa had two coaches in Harry's living room and they offered him a scholarship. So he had every opportunity to follow his family there and go to Iowa. And he came up to Minnesota on an official visit the next day after meeting with the Iowa coaches. Matt Simon, PJ Fleck were able to lock him down. And I can tell you, Harry is someone that Iowa is very, very pissed off about losing. Kirk Ferentz was in his living room, and Harry Van Dyne's, that is, the Thursday before National Signing Day, trying to get him to come on an official visit to ultimately flip. Fleck and Simon were able to lock that down. So Harry being 6'5", 185 pounds, someone who's probably going to be an X receiver, your field stretcher in this offense. So again, the wide receiver was a position that they needed a new infusion of talent evaluation and talent in general. And I think they went 3 for 3 on these three wide receivers, Luke.
All right. So let's look at tight end and fullback. These are some names I can actually pronounce. Nathan Bursch, a local guy, Jake Paulson, a kid from Kentucky. And then Nate Ulmore.
Umlor.
Jeez, I guess I can't pronounce it. But that kid's a big dude, 6'5", 260. Holy cats. Like, does he have, like, offensive lineman potentially written all over him at some point? He's a big dude.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I do want to give a little bit of an update that Connor Mose and Danny Pietrzewski, two walk-ons from the last class, Connor being from East Ridge and Danny being from South St. Paul, are no longer on the Gopher football roster. Danny transferred to St. John's. And I think Connor just isn't playing football anymore at the University of Minnesota. So they do need bodies there. But tight end is a position historically that Kirk Sriracha. Sriracha.
It's almost like it. Sriracha, you know, the hot
that's
sauce.
That's what I know. Honestly, that's but what I've been calling it.
It's not quite right, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's a position they haven't used historically in their offenses, but they did sign three because there is only five on scholarship, and two of them are going to be graduating after this season in Wozniak and Lingen.
They go a lot of 11 personnel then?
Yes. Okay. Historically, that's what they do. A lot of three wide receiver sets, a lot of 11 personnel.
Got it.
So first and foremost, Nathan Bursch is the best blocking tight end I've seen at a Gopher football camp in 7 years. He absolutely eviscerated everybody on the board drill that day. I think he is going to be a more athletic Lincoln Plesic type, which there is absolutely nothing wrong with. Again, you knew how much this team liked to run the ball, and they didn't really have a great blocking tight end last year when Brandon went down. Wozniak was able to do some things, but I think Bursch is a guy that is obviously very athletically gifted, 6'4", 6'5", 245, 250 pounds. I know from talking with a couple of his high school coaches, they wouldn't be surprised at all to see him continue to balloon and potentially get to that 280, 85-pound range. Maybe he's going to be an offensive lineman.
Okay.
So this is going to be your true Y tight end.
Yeah.
Where he's if Nathan Bursch is nothing else other than a fantastic run blocker for the next 4 years, I will be elated. Don't ask him to do a lot of things in the passing game because he's still developing that speed and those hands, but he's a fantastic blocker. So I'm looking forward to that. Nate Umlor is someone that I know PJ is extremely high on. PJ talked about in his press conference that Mr. Umlor set what he thinks is a record for the number of unofficial visits to a campus. He thinks Nate was on his campus probably 18, 19 times before he ended up committing to Western Michigan. He was one of the guys that was offered immediately on Friday when PJ took the job, and he committed sight unseen to Minnesota after that. When you look at his film, he's another guy I'm very intrigued to see what he ends up being because he is 6'5", 255, 260 pounds already. And he's extremely athletic. He's someone that I'm not going to call him Max Williams because I don't think that's accurate. But I think he's just someone that is a very big body that's extremely athletic that you can do a lot of things with. I think Umlor especially can help mitigate what would have been with Noah Gindorf because I think Umlor and Gindorf can be similar players. Umlor is also very effective or efficient on the defensive side of the ball. I believe he had 30-plus tackles for loss for his high school in Michigan. Then finally is Mr. Jake Paulson, someone I am extremely excited about. Nate had multiple other power – yeah, excuse me, Jake Paulson. Yeah. Someone from Louisville, Kentucky, someone who had numerous other Power 5 offers, someone who canceled an official visit to LSU where – my LSU sources tell me that if Jake would have went on an official visit there, he would have gotten an LSU offer. He is someone who is 6'4", 245 pounds, and I love to watch him play football. If you're going to watch only a few highlight tapes from this class tonight as you're listening to this, I'd pull up Jake Paulson Huddle and watch his senior tape. He's extremely effective as a pass catcher, and he's very effective as a run blocker. I honestly believe if you had to put a gun to my head, I think Jake Paulson is a multi-year starter at Minnesota by the time his career ends. And I would not be surprised at all to see him be an early guy or a guy who gets early playing time. I just love his tape. I think he can be extremely effective between the hashes where you saw Minnesota not really have a passing threat from their tight end last year. Once Lingen went down and Colton Beebe had a torn meniscus, he was playing through. Nate Wozniak wasn't exactly the guy. So I think Jake can provide that in between the hashes, and I'm excited about all three of these guys especially.
All right, let's talk a little offensive line. We've already touched on that You know, they're down just injury wise, even going into spring ball. So they bring in three bodies this year. Kind of the star of the class is Blaze Andrews from Marshall. You have a guy named Kyle Sasek and John Schmidt. What do we know about these guys, Ryan?
Well, I think the first thing to address is people are probably going to be like, well, where's Eric Abogi, the Gopher commit, offensive line commit for Robbinsdale Cooper? He did not sign on Wednesday, folks. He's got some test score issues to clean up. I know that some are optimistic that just because it is a test score, he may be able to get it up. But, you know, I do know some of the scores he's been getting on his test scores, and I'm not exactly optimistic. So if he does not sign with Minnesota here in the next 3 months, where he'll have opportunities to do so in terms of continuing to take the ACT and the SAT to get a qualifying score to go with his GPA to be cleared through the NCAA clearinghouse, I would anticipate him signing at Iowa Western and then Minnesota signing him back in 2 years. So you look at the offensive line commits, Minnesota signs the best offensive lineman in the Minnesota area. Obviously in Blaze Andrews, he's the cream of the crop, obviously being a four-star scout 300 guy. We feel very highly about Blaze here. I think tackle is going to be written in his future. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some work at guard also early in his career, just because Minnesota needs bodies there, maybe a little bit more than they do need at tackle, because I think Donnell Green is going to be a starter for the next 2 years, and he's going to be a redshirt junior. And then I think Nick Conley from Red Wing still has a very bright future ahead of him. So I think they may need help on the interior more than at tackle, but we'll see how it plays out. But Blaze is going to be a fantastic offensive lineman. He's 6'6", 305 pounds. He's powerful in the run blocking, and he's someone at 6'6", 305 pounds. If he's out pulling, he looks very natural in doing so. He can gain speed. He can compensate for what is usually a smaller back seven player, and you can usually put them on their keister. So I'm excited about Blaze getting here. Kyle Sasek is someone I know that Alan True, our Midwest scout analyst, is going to swear by until the day he dies. He has Sasek, I believe, as a top 50 or a top 60 overall offensive tackle in the country, and he is much, much higher on him than most of the other recruiting services. He's been able to see him live probably 5 or 6 times, and he thinks Minnesota got an absolute steal. 6'7", 285 pounds, another guy who's probably going to have to play tackle, someone that is still getting stronger, someone that is still putting weight onto his frame. He's put on 25 pounds in the last, I believe, 4 or 5 months, but he's someone that I know Ed Warner and Brian Callahan cannot wait to work with. And then finally, the center position with Tyler Moore leaving is one I'm interested to see what happens, whether it's Connor Rolson, Jared Weiler. We'll see how it works out. But Minnesota did just sign the number one center in the Midwest, according to scout.com, in John Michael Schmidt, someone that had other Power 5 offers, someone that I know was committed to PJ at Western Michigan, someone that is 6'3", 285 pounds. He's another guy that's put on weight recently. When you watch his tape, he's just a mean SOB. You know, he's someone that's physical, he's mean, and he loves to just drive you into the ground. As long as there's been no whistle, he's going to put your defensive lineman into the ground. So you look at what they have in terms of once these three get to campus, they will have 12 scholarship offensive linemen once fall camp comes. And that's not nearly enough bodies, especially considering they don't have – they only have two walk-ons. And I will not be talking about walk-ons in this podcast because they were not announced. And they weren't announced because some of the guys still have to be accepted into the university. All the rest of these scholarship guys have already been accepted or applied and accepted out for the most part outside of Eric Abogi. So 12 guys on offense, Luke, and for the most part, I'm excited to see what this new talent evaluation does for PJ Fleck and staff.
Yeah, I think as we switch to defense, this will be the interesting position or the interesting side of the ball to keep an eye on. You know, at Western Michigan, you know, PJ Fleck and staff were very successful. Here with the recent stabs, our defenses were very, very successful. They were able to eye and find talent, a lot of under the radar guys that they were even able to put into the NFL. They've had a streak of I don't know how many years where they've put a defensive back in the NFL, which is, you know, really impressive. So it'd be really interesting to see how this new staff is able to identify defense. Let's go through some of these guys, starting with the defensive line, and let's start with defensive end. again. We got a local guy. I'm not even going to try these names either. I'm going to give you both of them.
Yeah, it's a couple of namers. So one being from Hopkins, Boye Mafe, a defensive end I know I'm really high on after seeing him at a camp setting. And then Ezi Otemiwu. I know Fleck just calls him Big O, and I am 100% okay going with that. So with Tamarian Johnson probably going to be expelled, that's another scholarship down here. And so when you look at Boye Mafe, he is someone that I don't think has quite nearly even started to scratch his potential. He is someone that plays outside linebacker at he did at Hopkins for the last 3 years. He's only played defensive end twice in his life. One was at a University of North Dakota camp, and the other one was at a University of Minnesota camp that I was at. And him and Jermaine Johnson, another kid from Eden Prairie, where if his grades were in order, he'd be signing with Minnesota. They were absolutely electric that day, whether it was pass rushing, whether they were on the board drill. Boye, at 6'4", 225 pounds, ran, I think, a 4.69 and a 4.70. And Minnesota's old staff clocked them slow. 10-foot broad, 30-plus inch vert. I mean, the kid, and what I want you to think about when you think about Boye Mafe is I want you to think about Kamal Martin. I think that Boye is going to be a bigger version of Kamal athletically. And if they can harness that, and if Bryce Pop can teach him how to play defensive end, I think they got an instant impact guy. And then finally with Big O, 6'6", 235 pounds, he was committed to PJ at Western Michigan. And Big O is someone that had other Big Ten offers. Illinois offered, I believe Indiana offered, and Purdue offered. So a kid from Indiana had both in-state Power 5 offers. He chose Western Michigan, then he chose to come to Minnesota with PJ. So they are going to be losing Galen Elmore after the year, so I think early playing time is another place where this is available. But Boye and Ezi are two guys with a lot of length, and I know they can run.
All right, let's look at defensive tackle, man. You look at the depth at defensive tackle, there is literally nothing in the freshman class. There is nothing in the sophomore class. You got one junior and three seniors. So looking at defensive tackle, they bring in four bodies there. You got a Noah Hickok, Malcolm Robinson, Austin Schrick, and my favorite name, Royal Silver III.
Yeah, defensive tackle with the old staff. I mean, you look at this defensive tackle depth chart. Gary Moore is going to be a redshirt junior, and Merrick Jackson, Stephen Richardson, and Andrew Stelter are all being seniors. They could conceivably all four graduate after this season. Obviously, Gary being a redshirt junior, more than likely he is someone that probably is going to have his degree if he doesn't already after the May semester. They could all leave. And what does that leave you? That leaves you absolutely zero defensive tackles that are going to be taking reps during the spring for this upcoming year. So they need bodies, and they need bodies bad. So Noah Hickok is someone I think that's going to be similar to Andrew Stelter, 6'4", 280 pounds. I know that there's some talk of him potentially playing defensive end early, but I think he's a kid, once you get him to campus, he's going to put on 15 pounds easy, and at 6'4", 295 pounds. He's someone that just plays with a big motor, someone that is pretty good with his hands. Again, I think he's going to be a redshirt candidate, as most of these guys are probably going to be. Next being Malcolm Robinson, someone 6'2", 280 pounds from Maslin, Ohio. I know I've watched a documentary or two about Maslin football, how important it is to that culture and that city out there. So he already knows how important football is. And the story with Malcolm is he was originally committed to Purdue. I know he turned down a Kentucky official visit because he said he was solid at Purdue. PJ Fleck and Ed Werner, the offensive line coach, show up at his high school. And 5 minutes into their conversation, Malcolm was just like, yeah, I'll come play. Yeah. If I could describe one recruit that is fully bought into what PJ Fleck is trying to sell, it is Malcolm Robinson. Malcolm Robinson will do anything to run through a wall for PJ Fleck. And what I like about Malcolm on tape is, again, his motor. He knows how to use his hands, and I think that's half of the battle at defensive line is being able to get the hands off from the offensive lineman. He's got to put on some weight. He's got to get up to 290, 295 pounds, but if he's able to do so, I think he's going to be a pretty good player. Royal Silver III, which is arguably up there in the name category for best name in this 2017 class, someone from Iowa Western Junior College. And I know a couple of previous members of the staff recruited Royal when he was a high school kid in Iowa, and they wanted him to come play at Iowa State, but he didn't have the grades. And now that he's going to be graduating this May from Iowa Western, they want him to come up. He's a 3-for-2 guy, so he's going to essentially be a true junior when he steps on campus here in June. I do not anticipate him redshirting. I anticipate him playing right away, providing some depth for something were to happen and the guys in front of him. Then finally is what I know Bryce Pop and PJ Fleck think is the steal of the class defensively, and Austin Schrick.
I'll go with Schrick. It's hard. It's a tough one.
It is. So he's a kid six. I know when he came on his official visit, he measured in at 6'5½, 267 pounds from Carroll, Iowa. He was committed to Bryce Pop when Bryce was the defensive line coach at Northern Iowa. And once Bryce got to Minnesota, I know he was campaigning as hard as he possibly could to get Austin on an official visit. He finally got him on an official visit the last weekend. And what stands out to me about Austin, and for folks who are wondering, well, why didn't he have Iowa or Iowa State offers? I think that's a good question, because you watch his tape and he's pretty athletic at 6'5", 265. I can tell you he carries his weight extremely well. You think he's 235, 240 pounds, not 267. So that screams to me, once you get him up to 300 pounds to go with that 6'5½ frame, he has the longest arms of any defensive lineman I've seen in recent memory. You know, so he's going to have Steven Richardson, who's got the stumpiest arms, and he's going to have the longest arms in Austin. Just a very good motor, someone that's very athletic. He has a lot of weight to put on yet. He has to get a lot stronger, but the tools are there. So I anticipate them signing at least 4 more defensive tackles next class, obviously, because they are going to be potentially losing 4 more. But I think they hit their needs on the defensive line, signing 6 in 2017.
All right, let's talk a little bit about linebacker. It doesn't look like they took anybody at linebacker.
They took an early enrollee guy named Trenton Guthrie.
Oh, yeah.
Someone that was committed to PJ at Western Michigan, someone that's going to be an edge guy of types. I think if you want to compare him to somebody on the roster right now, I think he's probably, a poor man's Kamal Martin in terms of how they're going to use him. 6'2", 215 pounds, someone that has a lot of tape at defensive end, is a rush linebacker. I don't anticipate him playing early. Too much talent ahead of him. I mean,
there's a ton of talent at linebacker, like a ton.
He's got like 7 guys conceivably ahead of him. Celestine Waters, Juju Huff, Thomas Barber, Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin. He's a redshirt guy. Yeah. I don't know how he plays.
While we're on linebacker, let's just cover Blake Cashman. He currently does not have a scholarship, right?
Correct.
But that's kind of more of a thing of how the NCAA has set things up, but he will be on scholarship, right? So that's going to give us 84 at some point.
Well, that's what the thought process is.
Yeah, I mean, that conceivably he should be on scholarship given what he's put on the field this last season.
Yeah, obviously he was extremely productive. I think his last 5 games, 9.5 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks. The reason why Emma Carpenter got a scholarship and Blake didn't is there is some kind of a funky rule where if you're a walk-on in your first 2 years, if you give a scholarship to a kid, it counts against the current recruiting class. And so they thought they were going to be signing more than they did. And so Blake didn't get one. And I do anticipate him getting one in the fall, and it's counted against that and then. But I do think by the time Blake Cashman steps on the field next year, he will be on scholarship. So for everybody asking, why is he on scholarship? There is a kind of a funky rule because Blake is only in his second, going into his third season starting in the fall. He'll be on scholarship then. So just relax until the fall, folks.
Okay, so let's look at corner. They took a guy, another great name, Justus Harris.
It's spelled J-U-S-T-U-S, Justice. Justus Harris is someone I love on tape. Someone from Roswell, Georgia, someone that had multiple other Power 5 offers, but he waited too long initially, and those other schools filled up. So I believe he had Vanderbilt offer and I think 2 other Big Ten offers. He visited Colorado State. He visited Cincinnati, where he was committed. He also had other offers from Connecticut, Rutgers, and Vanderbilt. So other Power 5 offers, and then he came on an official visit the last weekend before signing day, and that's where he ultimately had his destination end up being. The question with Justice is going to be, how tall is he? Because on tape, I think he is a less athletic, more physical Keontae Harden. Now, obviously, Keontae Harden was Minnesota's best defensive back or most consistent defensive back when he was on the field last season. And on tape, I love Justice Harris, how physical he is at the point of attack, how he's able to find the ball. He plays the ball extremely well, and I love his hips. So I think he's going to be a guy that's going to have to play early. Obviously, when you look at the cornerback depth chart, Keandre Thomas is coming off his redshirt year. Coney Durr just had ACL surgery on January 20th. I would put about a 1% chance he plays in 2017. So, and then you also have Alonzo Creighton, who played sparingly last year, and then Antonio Chanot, who I'm not entirely sure has a – we'll have to see what Maurice Linguist does. But I think Justice Harris could play very, very early on.
All right. Safety, you bring in a guy named Adam Beck and a guy named Ken Handy Holly. Both, I think, pretty highly regarded talents, right?
Yes. I think Minnesota did very well at the safety position. Now, Adam is someone where I wouldn't be surprised to see him get early reps at cornerback, knowing what they have there, especially with Antoine Winfield coming back. If you can have Antoine, Duke McGee, and Kunle Ayinde, and if Kunle can play nickel, I think he's fine. But if you can have Winfield and Duke McGee back there, plus Ayinde, plus Ken Handy Holly's probably going to have to play, I think Adam can shift to cornerback, where he has played some early on, or he did play some as a senior. Both of these guys have fantastic length to go at 6'2" frames. Adam is only 185 pounds, where Ken is already over 200. Ken was a scout 300 four-star kid from Jackson, Alabama, someone who had early SEC offers, and then those schools got filled. And I know that other schools, after he committed to Minnesota in the SEC and the ACC, were trying to get him on official visits that final weekend, and he said, I'm good with Minnesota. So I think Ken plays early, 6'2", 200 pounds, very much a thumper, someone that if you're looking for someone that emulates Demaryius Travis, well, here's your guy. Adam Beck is going to be your 6'2" guy with length that I think is going to have to play a lot of different positions early in his career. So between both, all three of the guys they signed, I think they did pretty well. I know that there were a couple of guys that they missed out on. In Amir Marcette Smith, that's an interesting conversation. His mom won in Minnesota, and I don't necessarily think Amir did. But so Amir went to Iowa, and then Trey Kramer also went to Iowa. But Trey Kramer lied to PJ Fleck. So PJ had an in-home visit with him on a Thursday, and Trey said, yep, I won't go to Iowa this weekend. Well, Trey went to Iowa that weekend, and then he was very, 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 very adamant with PJ and the Minnesota staff, saying, I'm not here, I'm not here, I'm not here. Well, I can tell you, proof showed up to Minnesota that he was there, and they called him out on it. He went silent, then he apologized on the Twitter machine. And Trey tried, I believe, 2 days before signing day, which was Monday, Trey had three options. And he ultimately had to sign with his third of three options. He called Rutgers. He was like, hey, can I commit here? Nope, we don't have room. Called Minnesota back. Hey, can I commit here? Nope, we don't have room. And then finally he called Iowa, and they're like, yeah, sure, we'll take you. So know that you're getting, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say an Iowa or a Minnesota reject going to Iowa. So, you know, hindsight, I know a lot of people are bitter about that Trey wasn't accepted here by the staff, but they're not going to change their morals because they need a body. He lied. PJ's only known him for 2 weeks, and first impression he had of him was he lied adamantly to him for 36 hours. So he doesn't believe that's somebody that's really bought into the culture, bought into what he's trying to preach here at Minnesota, so they didn't take him. So defensively, hopefully they're going to be able to keep that production, like you said, but we'll have to see.
All right, and last but not least, everybody's favorite position, a specialist, a kicker, Grant Reeser, or I don't know.
Grant Reeser.
Rierce. These, I'm just horrible at reading names. I apologize.
It's a Friday night. You know, you've had a couple, 1, 2, 3 cocktails. I understand.
I have a cold. So really, ultimately, what I've been having is whatever those gel caps are to try to keep me decongested. But yeah, just brutal. I've actually seen Grant kick multiple times. He has a heck of a leg.
He's got a big leg, and he could have gone anywhere he wanted to. He wanted 3 offers when he was as a specialist, as a kicker. He wanted California, he wanted Northwestern, and he wanted Minnesota, and he got all 3. So he ultimately chose Minnesota because he wanted to stay home. And so how does Grant Rierce fit into things? I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a kickoff guy and a punter early in his career, because obviously Emma Carpenter being the Big Ten kicker of the year, he's now on scholarship. He has 2 years remaining. Ryan Santoso being a senior this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they burn his red shirt to just have him be the kickoff guy, because I believe Emmett had 8 kickoffs out of bounds in 13 games last year, 8 or 9. And that's all, that's not what they want. And so with Ryan also being the punter, maybe they transition him in a punter for a couple of years before they move him to kicker. I think Grant is going to have an opportunity to be a kickoff punter and a kicker during his career. So he may be a kickoff guy, then a punter, then a kicker later in his career, but he is someone with a gigantic leg, 6'4", 215 pounds. I think we have him rated as the 7th best kicker overall in the country. So he's got a big leg. So I think kickoff and potentially punting early on in his career, but towards the latter half, once Emmett graduates, he may go back to kicking. So he can do a lot of different things. He kicked, he punted, and he was a kickoff guy for East Ridge, but there's all 25 of them, Luke.
Yeah. So at a really high level, give us your assessment. It seems like they did a decent job given the short time period to assemble a class. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. For trying to fill a recruiting class in 3 weeks, I think they did pretty well. And I believe they finished 38th overall by the scout rankings. And I think they finished per star ranking 45th, which is on par with Tracy Clay's and Jerry Kill's best class. So PJ was able to have the best class that that Tracy would have had. He did it in 3 weeks. So if that's any indication, I think Minnesota is going to be in store for some pretty good recruiting here. So for what he was able to do in 3 weeks in terms of getting 20 commitments in about 21 days from, I think it was pretty remarkable. Now, I don't think it's an accurate representation of what recruiting is going to look like here, because I think we'll give him a full year to recruit. I think he is going to be pushing to be in a top 30, top 25 kind of a situation, because I know this staff has the bar set very high. Mm-hmm. And when you look at this early 2018 in-state class, it doesn't particularly look promising, where the 2016 class was the best we've seen in 10, 15, 20 years. 2017 was about on par with what you see at Minnesota. Now I think they're swinging under in terms of the amount of talent. So I wouldn't be surprised to see only 5 or 6 guys go D1, but we'll have to see. There's a lot of time and more names will surface. But given the 3-week time period PJ had, I think he did pretty well. And I know that the next question you're probably going to ask me before we get out of here for this episode of Go for Gridiron Radio is, do you see any late signees or grad transfers or transfers? Yes. We've talked about on Gopher Illustrated, they're looking at a defensive tackle transfer, a former 5-star kid from Texas Tech. He has a connection to the offensive line GA that is now here. He's a Hawaiian kind of a kid. So there's a connection there. He's supposed to be visiting in March. We'll see if that happens. I know this staff is also exploring the grad transfer market in terms of at the defensive back position and at the quarterback position, because mm-hmm. there is obviously a need at both positions. I know that there's a couple of names at quarterback that they are looking into that are pretty highly rated, but I don't think there's really a point in getting into them yet, because these kids are still enrolled at their current institutions. And until they actually hit the grad transfer market and everybody knows what's going on, I don't want to give people false hope. So we'll get into that in a further podcast. But, yes, there is a potential for some late signees, some guys that qualify late. Obviously, there is some scholarships to play with, but there's no really names to note. And once there are names to note, the subscribers to Gopher Illustrated will be the first to know.
All right, one last question here, just on general kind of recruiting strategy for this staff. You've seen a lot of offers go out early to the 2018 class relative to what we saw from the Kill and Clays era. What do you see also like on the JUCO front? What's the kind of strategy as a whole for just recruiting in general going into 2018?
Yeah, so recruiting philosophy. This is a staff that isn't going to want to take a lot of JUCOs because they think that it just doesn't fit necessarily well with what PJH wants to do. But I think next class, so you saw Minnesota take a junior college defensive tackle in this class. I think Minnesota's going to have to take three or four JUCOs next class. And again, I don't know that PJ and his staff necessarily want to do it, but they just have to do it. So when you look at places like defensive line, potentially in the secondary as well, you may have to explore some fronts there. And then in terms of recruiting bases, PJ has talked a lot about the 600, 700 miles area is where they want to recruit. So I think in terms of comparing it to the last coaching staff, I think PJ is going to have a much bigger presence in the St. Louis area, in the Missouri area, in the Ohio area. Especially, I think you're going to see him go after the best kids in the Midlands and the Midwest and kind of the whatever that area is out in Ohio. I expect a very large presence in terms of increases there in St. Louis, Ohio, and just the Midwest area. I don't think that they're going to mess around in Florida as much, which is sweet music to my ears because I think that is the most over-recruited state in the country. And I just don't, there is talent there, obviously, but you're not going to get the top talent there. So I don't understand why Tracy wanted to send three or four coaches there every year, but that's here nor there at this point. So I think you'll see Texas still being an area that they're going to explore. I think Georgia is still an area that they're going to be into. I don't think they're going to be in Alabama as much. And so with decreasing their presence there, Ohio, St. Louis, and just the Midwest in general is where they're really going to spend their time.
All right. I think with that, we'll call this one good. Appreciate everybody listening, particularly this year. We saw a drastic increase in the number of people listening. So that's just totally awesome. And we appreciate it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We can't thank you guys enough. I mean, as Luke said, we've seen a large viewership or listenership, or whatever you want to call it, increase. And we thank you guys so much. So whether it was you guys telling, your seatmate next to you at TCF Bank, telling your buddy, who is a good Gopher football friend, we can't thank you guys enough. And again, if you think you know someone that would like listening to Gopher football in depth as it is, because I know that there isn't enough of it in this market, I'd encourage you to tell them about the podcast. And if you don't know anybody that is a huge Gopher Rube like you, the best thing you can do for us to help us out is just rate and review us on iTunes, because again, that helps other Gopher fans who are searching for the podcast, just searching Gophers on whatever podcasting app you guys use. That's how they find it. So again, from the bottom of our heart, Luke and I can't appreciate you guys helping us out, when Derek joined or whenever it was in terms of listening. So we thank you guys so much. And as I mentioned, I don't know that we're going to have a podcast out here for a couple weeks unless something changes. I'm sure we'll have something once spring ball gets going. But if not, we thank you guys for a fantastic 2016, 2017 podcasting season. We thank you guys so much, and thanks for listening. Go Gophers.